I just looked up, stats to see how many people say that they've encountered UFOs, and it's about 10% for the general population. But for the GATE program, everyone that completed my survey, it's 60% of people that were in GATE have had UFO experiences. So that has to make you think, not to mention Jake Barber's testimony and Jordan Jozak's. But that has to make you think that there is some kind of correlation, not just with psychic abilities and the GATE program, but possible ET communication.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Folks, welcome to Dreamland. We have a show for you today that I consider among the most important I've ever done, with an extraordinary individual who you will meet and get to know. I'm going to just begin by reading something. All references to GATE, MK Ultra, and related programs are in this show and in the book we are going to discuss by this author, drawn from public records, declassified materials, survivor correspondence, and other available testimony. The author and interviewee explores these connections as open questions for further inquiry and does not assert confirmed affiliation or official policy unless explicitly supported by documentary evidence, of which there is a lot. So we are not blowing smoke, folks. This is real. All right. Desta Barnaby is a researcher, author, and explorer of consciousness and the unseen. She is a writer, a researcher, an investigator of the hidden forces shaping reality, including very human hidden forces that are shaping the reality of children. She has co-authored books with Grant Cameron, and that's how I'd met Desta, was through Grant, who is, of course, incredibly cool and a major, major factor in pushing this whole thing forward for years. She explores the intersection of consciousness, ET contact, high strangeness phenomena, and she is involved in unlocking psychic potential, ancient mystic and mystical methods of pain relief, and all kinds of things like supernatural encounters. She is the creator of Mysteria Luna, a YouTube channel and online store and research platform dedicated to paranormal investigations. And it's also a website, Mysteria Luna, and it's full of fascinating information, including material about the GATE program that we're going to discuss that is absolutely remarkable. Now, that's Desta. You know me. You know my two ladies behind me, my two wives, my dear Annie and my other wife, who shall remain nameless because she's never given me a name, but I love them both dearly and deeply. Okay. We're here to talk about MK Ultra for Children, the hunt for psychic abilities through the GATE program. Welcome to the show, Desta, after that incredibly long, complicated introduction.
Thank you so much, Willie.
Well, it's a real pleasure to have you. We had mucho trouble getting this show together. All kinds of crazy things went wrong, but that's par for the course. I don't know whether it was just the universe playing games or sheer chance or some kind of other thing that would like this not to be talked about, because it definitely is not like to be talked about. MK Ultra for Children? That's the scariest thing I've ever heard. And it would be even scarier if it hadn't happened to me. But in any case, tell us about, what is this about now?
Well, it started at the beginning of last year, so about a year ago, when I just started reading some online forums and on online videos and stuff that people were talking about the GATE program. And at the time, I wasn't even aware of what the GATE program was. I'm from Canada. We didn't call it that. We just called it an enrichment program. So I wasn't sure what it really was, but as I watched a couple of videos and started hearing some of the very familiar things that everyone was talking about, like having the pink drink, wearing these headphones, and guessing things, you know, having nap time in the middle of the day when you were pulled out for this enrichment program. But mostly for me, it was the missing time, like where people couldn't remember anything about what happened once they actually went into the guidance counselor's office or whatever space that they were using for this program. And that was exactly my experience. I don't remember hardly anything. I think I was in it for 4 or 5 years. I remember a few things about it, but not really that much at all. And so I started thinking, oh, I wonder if this happened in Canada too. I wonder if the enrichment program that I was in, you know, had anything to do with GATE. And, you know, after a lot of researching and watching other videos and researching myself, I realized that we did have it in Canada. It was these enrichment programs. I did a FOIA request for my own childhood records from my elementary school and actually from the mental health department in Winnipeg, where I'm from, in Canada, because a lot of the, if they were doing any mental testing on people, it was put into a different place, not just the elementary school. So I did a FOIA request and got a couple times and was met with a lot of resistance and a lot of phone calls that just said that we don't have the records anymore. And but eventually I ended up getting some of it, and they did call it the GATE program. So we weren't told that when I was in the program, but all the FOIA documents that I got back from my elementary school, it was called the gifted program, gifted and talented program here as well. So it was really, we were just discussing Jake Barber, and it was really the Jake Barber interview with Ross Coulthard on News Nation, where he said that he was in the GATE program and that he is sure that that has something to do with the very strange telepathic communication that he had with the egg-shaped craft that he was carrying from the UFO-like retrieval program. And when he said that, and so it was like confirmation that someone else was in the GATE program, was in the UFO community, you know, you could say, and had some kind of telepathic or psychic abilities, that I really thought, oh my God, this is really beyond what I could have thought that was, you know, in the realm of this story. So I thought that I should start writing it down and actually seeing, you know, doing some research. So that's kind of where it started. And I had to go back into the MKUltra part just as kind of a preface for people that don't know that there was covert operations done by the CIA in Canada and the States. And the government was looking at things like this. So I wanted to kind of have a foundation for people that just thought that this is crazy and there's no way the government would ever do stuff like this. I wanted to kind of, you know, lay out the foundation for the book that this is something that they look at. They look at psychic abilities and ESP and ET contact and all sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting to know Jake a little bit. He's a wonderful man. He really is. And, you know, the only whistleblower who's still sort of iffy about me that I would like to know and think would be important to communicate with is David Grush. Mm. And he's a little scared, I think. And I don't know why, but, you know, that'll change eventually. I'm good at making people realize that I'm actually harmless at times. Anyway, in any case, this program, you mentioned missing time. And, you know, I had a demonstration of missing time given to me in Paris years ago in the 1990s by two guys who, I'll tell this story very briefly. My wife always thought I was made sick on purpose. We went to Paris. We had dinner one night, and then the next morning, everyone in the family was fine except me. I was so sick, I couldn't get out of bed. And they all went trooping off to Tours, to go to Sacré-Cœur and stuff. We were in Montparnasse. So, a few minutes after they left, the door, there was a knock on the door, and I thought, how annoying. I mean, they know I'm sick in bed, so I've got to get up, and because they even had keys. I go to the door and I open it because I'm pissed off, and it's not them. It's two guys. And I think, oh my God, what is this? Because they want to come in. They said, one of them never talked, the other one talked. Anyway, the long and short of it is they demonstrated missing time to me, on me. And it's real. They said it was done with sound, and it was so completely seamless, Desta. They literally said to me, the man said to me, I asked him, if you demonstrate this on me, will I be able to remember? And he said, no. For a few moments afterwards, you will be able to remember, but not much. And I said, okay, let's do it. And he said, would you like to listen to the tape? And no, I said to him, can I listen to it afterwards? He said, yes, but you won't be able to remember for long. That's what that was. And I said, so then I said, okay. And he said, would you like to listen to the tape? And I said, yes. And he started playing it. We had done it. It was that seamless, Desta.
Wow.
Totally. So when you say you had missing time, I get that. I really do get that. I'll tell you all I remember about the tape is I was very happy about it. Whatever I said, I don't know. Oh, or whatever questions he asked. But it made me very happy.
Right.
Which is unusual. Usually this makes you really feel upset. So let's go on.
I'm sure that these MKUltra tactics that they would do for mind controlling people have a lot to do with that, right? Where it's very, very seamless. And there were stories of like women over the phone who they could just hypnotize. Well, they've never been face to face with them, and just over the phone, certain people are really susceptible to it. But a majority of the population, you know, can undergo these techniques and actually be, you know, not know what exactly is happening to them. So I'm not surprised by that it was so seamless and you couldn't even tell that it was happening and that you were happy about it. That's really creepy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about, let's get into this by getting into you first. You at some point realize you're part of some kind of a program. What triggered this in you?
Like what was triggered in me?
Yeah. I mean, how did you must have lived a long time without being aware of the fact that you were, you were in gifted and talented as everybody who does this is. But you didn't see this as, you didn't see anything unusual until a certain point in your life.
Absolutely. I had just published a book about a year ago about the beginning of 2025, and it was about psychic abilities. And the funny thing is that in that book, it's funny, but for now, I was writing about how to get into this space, right? How to get into the really deep meditative trance-like state where you could, you know, remote view or channel or get all this, you know, information from outside of this reality. And the funny thing is my whole life, I have been meditating. So I assumed for this book, even just 1 year ago, right before I started researching the Gate program, I assumed that it was just, I was a good meditator. And so I had like a little bit of help, another story with like an ET kind of presence, like a very strange thing. But I always assumed that I was just good at being able to get my brain in that space. And then I just linked it to meditation. It must be because I, you know, have practiced meditation for a long time. So it was really only that after I was researching a lot about dissociation. So I have a lot of in the book about a psychologist from Winnipeg that was in Winnipeg at the time called Dr. Colin Ross. And he's a psychologist, and his expertise, I guess, is on a dissociative identity disorder, what they used to call multiple personality disorder. And so I had been reading his books and I didn't really I knew what dissociation was, but I never would have ever linked it for myself, because in my own mind, I had a great normal upbringing. My childhood, there was nothing that weird or traumatic or anything like that. So even Grant and I, when we talk to experiencers and stuff about, especially like about mediumship or like deep trance channeling or something, it's usually people that have had some kind of trauma when they were a kid. And I always think that I didn't. I never did. So I had just been associating my psychic abilities with my meditation practice. And it was only when I really started researching this, understanding I was in the GATE program, hearing what other people were saying and looking at some of the, you know, the records and long-term effects of what other people are reporting right now, which is a huge increase in psychic abilities from a lot of these people that were in the GATE program, that I really started realizing that I think that my ability to do this psychic work has nothing to do with my meditation skills. It has to do with the dissociation ability. And I think that that dissociation ability came from the GATE program. So whether one of the theories that I look at in the book is, I don't know if this is, if we were chosen for the GATE program because they somehow could figure out that we had maybe not specifically dissociation abilities, but like really sensitive people and a certain type of person that might be easily able to dissociate or not. I'm not sure if that's what it was, or if they did something to us in that program from accounts like yours, where that was a very traumatizing experience for you and as well as a lot of other people. And so that's the one of the theories I go through in the book, is trying to say, were we made this way to be able to easily dissociate and hence maybe perhaps be able to have psychic abilities, or were we chosen for the program because they already could somehow tell or test, or were we tested, you know, in the program and they could tell that we already had these innate psychic abilities or ability to dissociate?
We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to find out exactly what Desta means by dissociate. And also, what are the criteria? Who's chosen and why? We'll be right back.
Did you know that a family, probably very much like your family, once spent years with the visitors in their everyday lives? I'm not talking about downloads or magical experiences. I'm talking about daily life. That was my family, my wife Anne and our son, at our cabin in upstate New York many years ago. I wrote a book about it, two books, Transformation and then Breakthrough, that are a diary of those extraordinary days. When Transformation was published, the media was ready for us. They beat the book to death. They made sure it sold very few copies. In fact, you probably haven't read Transformation or Breakthrough. You probably never heard of them. But they remain an absolutely unique chronicle. Now, what I've done, since I think that many more ordinary families are going to be experiencing life with these visitors sooner or later, is that I have updated Transformation. And I'm calling it Transformation 2025. It brings together all of our new knowledge of them, of our own minds, of our brains, of how the interaction works, all of it. It's absolutely unique in the world. Transformation 2025 will be out on December the 15th on Kindle, shortly after that in hardcover and softcover, and an audiobook read by me. Transformation 2025. Don't miss this. As we get closer to disclosure, we get also closer to contact. I've done this. Anne did it. Our son did it. It's perfectly possible. It's not easy. But what an adventure Transformation and Breakthrough are. And the adventure continues. And it will continue soon in many more lives, I think. Your life, your family's life. What will it be like? Find out what we experienced. Learn from it. And be ready. Transformation is coming. Transformation 2025.
Where is the unknown country? Is it out there in the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us, in you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. Unknowncountry.com. There's no place like it in the world.
We're talking to Desta Barnaby about her new book and her whole life experience of the GATE program. And Desta, before we left the air, we were talking, just about to talk about dissociation and what you mean by that. And is it something that can be induced? And if so, is it induced intentionally in that program? So can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So definitely, absolutely, for part of the MKUltra bit of this, there was a project called Subproject 136. And there's hardly any information about the program. But the one quote, I hope I can get it right, that I read about this program was, it said, like, special attention to be given to dissociative instances, because they happen, this dissociation happens immediately before an ESP event or a psychic ability event. And in this subproject, they were testing children, mediums, and psychotics. So they were very aware that dissociation precedes some kind of psychic ability, precognition, telepathy, like whatever they were looking at, remote viewing, could be any of those things. So definitely the program, like definitely the government and MKUltra, they definitely knew that dissociation and psychic abilities kind of go hand in hand. I can't remember if I answered your question.
No, that's good. It's fine. MKUltra for children. And this is building something. Something hidden in the society that certain people are part of and others are not, which always bothers me, because these sort of exclusive groups, we've had so much of that in human history, and it's never good. The secret societies and stuff, secrecy. Who was it? An old socialist, Norman Thomas, said, "Where the secrets start, the republic stops." And he could not have been more right. And we don't live in a republic at all anymore. And practically everything that happens that's of any importance is secret.
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's horrible. We are kind of left on the sidelines. The people who have to do the grunt work and keep the world going don't matter to the people above them anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's happened in society before. It happened to the French. And that didn't work out at all for them in the end. They changed their whole way of government. And that's going to happen too, again. It'll happen again. Mm-hmm. Let me go back. I want to go to I think it's called a FIPP, a FIPA request in Canada, right?
Yeah.
It's the same as a FICA request here, where you're asking for anything about whatever the subject is. Mm-hmm. You FIPA'd for yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
And you got 135 pages out of 300.
Right.
And now, we touched on this, but you didn't specifically say what you had gotten. What did you get?
Well, it was a very long process. So I asked for the records, And, you know, it takes them 2 months or something like that to get back to you. They have 30 or 60 days to get back to you. And it was on the very last day they gave me some, and they gave me the wrong box of information, not one of the boxes that I asked for. So I did get a bunch of information, but it was from the year I was born, not the year that I was in the GATE program. So I thought that was really strange. So I said, so I had to reapply for the whole, like re-request it. And then after the 60 days or whatever, I didn't get it. So I had to call them, and they said they asked for an extension on it. And so they were given another 60 days. And then they didn't give it to me on that final day again. So I had to call back, and then they said it was coming soon. And then it took another month or something to get it. And she did say, we have 300 pages here. And I said, well, send it all to me. You don't have to go through it. You know, if there's any way that you could just send it to me, I can look through it. I have no problem. I got a lot of time on my hands. So if there's any way to send me more than less, I'd rather have more than less. And so when I ended up getting it, I got about 135 pages out of the 300. So I don't know what they took out, but there was certainly nothing in it with my name. It was just things that had reference to the gifted and talented or gifted program, enrichment program, which is, you know, mostly what they were calling it in my area, at least. But the stuff that I got back was still interesting because, I'll tell you one thing that was really interesting that I got back was that there was school divisions, I guess, have little conferences and people coming to speak, which I wouldn't have known that before. But the year that I was in grade two, which was 1979, I'm pretty sure it was that year, that there was a conference held at the school, and all the conference that I could see that they talked about was about school related things, you know, how to teach the kids better, or, you know, some kind of cognitive things, psychological things, had nothing to do with anything outside of the school division. But the year that I was in grade two, which was the year that my program started, I was in the GATE program for the first year, the presentation was from someone from the Hamilton House in Winnipeg. And the Hamilton House in Winnipeg is a place that's just, you know, 10 minutes away from my house or whatever in Winnipeg. But it was the main, like, you know, you could look it up, the Hamilton House, Winnipeg. It's the main place where they would have seances in the turn of the century. And there was people from all over the world that would come to Winnipeg for these physical medium seances, where they also had cameras, like a stack of 50 cameras or something, that were taking pictures of the ectoplasm, of the mediums that were in trance, of chairs levitating. It's a very famous place. And the very interesting part is, why would someone from the Hamilton House be giving a presentation on psychic abilities and mediumship at an elementary school in 1979? I, you know, there's no explanation, of course, for it, but I just thought, like, if I didn't know what Hamilton House was, I probably would have just breezed over that part of the information. But because I do, they're, you know, I thought that was like really weird why they would be telling kids or telling the teachers of kids about anything to do with psychic abilities, especially in those days. So that to me really stood out, like that had to be a preface for them of like why they were getting into the GATE program, maybe some of the experiments that they were going to do. Maybe it was kind of an explanation. Of course, you know, I don't know, but that was the most interesting part. There was no really interesting, like there was nothing about me specifically named in any of my requests. It was just really like teachers coming up from Texas and from places in the States, and conferences that were held in Germany for the gifted and talented education program. And so it was really just back and forth between the school division and my elementary school about how they were going to deal with these GATE kids. There wasn't much other like really interesting stuff that ties into any of this.
I didn't think there would be, but I have a feeling there would have been on those pages they didn't give you, including, I would guess, your name.
Yeah.
Exactly. And why you were there. Now, on MysteriaLuna.com, you have got a survey for people who are just beginning to put together the results. And you texted me that the results are pretty significant. Can you tell us about the survey and the results?
Yeah, so we just... Sorry?
No, go ahead, please.
Oh, Yeah, Mysteria Luna is just, it's a website and a YouTube channel that my fiance and I run, and we do YouTube videos, and we have a little shop, and we've always been interested in the paranormal and, you know, any of this high strangeness stuff. So we just do videos that talk about some of this stuff. So we did one on the GATE program as well. So what we did is I made a survey on there for people that were in the GATE program, just because while I was researching the book, I wanted to see if I could reach out. And instead of just reading comments, basically in YouTube videos, I wanted to connect with some of these people, talk to them, and see if anyone was interested in filling out this survey. So I asked a bunch of things that just personal information that I wanted, like if anyone knew their Myers-Briggs personality type, because I put that in the book. And I think that I'm an INFJ. I'm guessing that Jake Barber is an INFJ. That's where I got that that idea from. So I just put a bunch of things just as a side.
Now, a lot of people are not going to know what an INFJ, exactly what this is. Can you explain it a little bit?
I don't really know that much about Myers-Briggs, like about the other personality types, but I was tested multiple times, 3 times in 5 years, in like 2000 or 1999 and into the early 2000s when I used to work. That was something that my boss, for our like one of our conferences or whatever, did like an extracurricular activity just for us to know what our personality types were. So an INFJ is really like an intuitive feeling person. So what, and so because I've studied a lot of that, specifically my personality type, I've also recognized in the UFO community, because I've been doing this with Grant for over a decade, I really noticed that I think a lot of INFJs are attracted to the UFO community. So INFJ is basically like an introverted, intuitive, feeling kind of person. So those are like the main qualities, I guess, in it. I can't really explain it much better. I don't know that much about it, but I do know about the INFJ, and it's people that are like, you know, introspective, and are researchers, perhaps like deeper critical thinkers. And they have a strong intuition, pattern recognition, and they're sensitive, like, you know, more sensitive. There's another thing called HSPs, which is highly sensitive people. And I'm also one of that. And I think that has to do with INFJs. But when I heard Jake speak about on that Ross Coulthard News Nation interview, he was also talking about other special ops people that he was working with. And he was calling them peaceful warriors, like he said that their personality types were oxymorons, like peaceful warriors, or like dead serious goofballs, or can't remember the third one. And so
I think I qualify as a dead serious goofball myself.
That's why I was asking about if you, like when I sent you the survey because I was wondering if you knew what your Myers-Briggs was, because I would, you know, guess that you were something close to that, and close to an INFJ. But I really feel that a lot of people in this community, I've met so many people in the UFO community over the years. And I always say, do you know what your Myers-Briggs is? Cause I feel like you're an INFJ. And sometimes they're like, oh my God, how would you know that? And I think I only know that because I recognize it, because I am one myself. But a lot of people say, no, I don't know what it is. And I send them to this free personality test survey or whatever. And they always come back and say, yeah, I did the test. I'm an INFJ. So I think it's just, so it's a very small percent of the population, 1 to 3% of the population that are INFJ. So the fact that I've met so many of them in the UFO community right there is just like very hard to believe, because they're such a small percentage of the general population, you know.
But you know, I'm pretty sure the visitors have their own selection criteria for people that they're going to come directly into contact with, because when you get a group of people like that together, they're all very, very smart, not necessarily classically educated, you know, in the university track, but brilliant.
Yeah.
Perfect example is Deb Cauble, who's the subject of Bud Hopkins's book Intruders. And we're great friends, and she's been on this show just recently. And she's a very, very sweet person. She would literally not hurt a fly. And I'm the same way. And you get a group of us together, and they're just the sweetest bunch of people. You realize to yourself, you know, muggers could come in and just take all our money, and we'd just smile and say, okay. Yeah. No, no. And That's because these beings are really small and fragile, and they don't want big, monstrous individuals, you know, who are going to lash out like I actually did when they abducted me. And that fits with the Myers-Briggs. Now, when it happened to, this was done to me, the one thing about it I do remember was I took was taken to a place called Our Lady of the Lake University and was tested by a Dr. Wren, W-R-E-N, as in the bird, and I remember it vividly because my mother was so proud of the fact that I had a really high IQ. And she was just saying, "You're really very smart, Whitty, very smart." And then the next thing I knew, this awful thing started to happen to me. And, you know, I know there is a lot of missing time and a lot of hypnotic blocking. And when we get back, we're going to take another break right now. We're going to talk about missing time and hypnotic blocking. Then later, we're going to get into the motivation for this program, because what does it have to do with the visitors, with non-human intelligence or anything, or is there something else going on? And then we're going to briefly at least touch on the way it has penetrated into the UFO community, which is a very deep and complex penetration. We'll be right back.
Have you ever read Communion? Or have you never read Communion? It's out in a new edition. Very powerful, a subtly new cover that reflects the fact that the visitors are now looking back at us because they truly are. You can get it from the unknowncountry.com store as a Kindle, as a beautiful, sumptuous paperback, or as an unabridged audiobook read by me. It's the first time in the whole life of Communion that it has been read in full in audio format. And believe you me, I felt that reading. I put my life, my memories into it. And I trust you can hear it in the voice. I sure felt it while I was reading. So get Communion. Listen to it. Read it. Communion is of central importance to all of our lives. UnknownCountry.com. It's huge. It's much more than just a Whitley Strieber book site. It contains thousands of hours of interviews, meditations, podcasts of all kinds. My original hypnosis tapes are there. You can actually hear the moment that I discovered that I, at least, was not alone in this universe in the office of Dr. Donald Klein so many years ago. Whitley Strieber audiobooks, Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, Breakthrough, Majestic, and so much more, powerful meditations, but more even than all that, it is a community of people who are either looking to gain contact or actually in contact now. There is no community like it in the world. It is absolutely unique. Contact really is happening here. That's what these shows are all about. That's what my life and this website are about. It's real, and it can be of enormous benefit to us individually and to mankind as long as we take our part and do it our way. This is what being a member of Unknown Country is about. So go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today. Join us and join, very frankly, the future.
We're talking to Desta Barnaby, MK Ultra for Children, MysteriaLuna.com. Just extraordinary stuff. Now, here's a question. Let's pick up where we left off, because I'm about the selection process. Children selected and taken into this program, and it looks like a gifted and talented program on the surface. It didn't in my day. In my day, they just took us to an airbase every Thursday night, and I found a student film I made back in college. The name of it is Remember Thursday. And of course, that was me trying all those years ago to come back to that lost part of my life. Why is it lost? What's going on in the GATE program beyond the gifted and talented stuff?
Exactly. And that's one of the big mysteries. And a lot of theories online is it had to do with the pink drink. Did you have the pink drink? Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I could have, but I've been given a drink by the visitors a couple of times, but I know about what that is. It's a very bitter, milky drink, and it is something that we've known about for ages. It goes all the way back to ancient Greece, and it's basically made out of opium, and it causes you to go into a completely blank sleep, and you wake up with no memories. It completely erases your memory, but it doesn't completely erase my memory. So go ahead.
Wow.
No pink drink for me. Then I remember.
Right. Well, yeah. And a lot of people don't even remember, but a lot of people, the parts that they do remember was anything before they were given the drink. So it is a pink chalky like liquid that we were given. Almost everyone remembers that it was in Dixie cups. And I certainly remember it. And some people remember that they were told that it was a fluoride drink, but they were supposed to drink it. I just heard a new interview recently where someone is saying that it might have been something that had to do with radiation, that they might have been trying to test something to do with radiation in this GATE program. And so maybe they were putting iodine in the pink drink to try and protect us from the radiation or whatever they were testing on us, because there's a theory that maybe the radiation was inducing psychic abilities and they were trying to test that. There's so many different, that's interesting that you said opium, because I was looking at all the different types of drugs that it could have been that would give us all such amnesia over what exactly happened, because we could remember before the pink drink, but almost no one can remember what happened after. I remember that we were told it was nap time, even when I was in grade 5, and my guidance counselor just told us to lie on the floor. It's nap time. So we were given the pink drink, which she called juice, take your juice, and we were given the pink drink, and then we put the headphones on. I'm pretty sure it was the gateway process, the same, you know, Robert Monroe from the Monroe Institute, and it was that set of tones with his voice, you know, in your head, and it was possibly then to induce an altered state of consciousness or to induce an out-of-body experience. That would be my guess of what that they were doing. Why did we have to have that amnesic barrier so no one could remember it at all? That's the scary part, because that's the part where people can, you know, why else would they need us all to forget what exactly was happening? But there's enough people that remember different things, and we all remember the same kind of things after that. Like, I have a lot of dreams still to this day of having an out-of-body experience, like floating basically around the library in my elementary school. And a lot of the GATE classes, they were either in my guidance counselor's office or it was us in the library, and it was only us in the library. So the library never had other kids in it. It was just me and the two other people in my GATE class and the teacher. And I don't really remember what we did there, but the strange thing is that I have memories of floating around the my elementary school library, and we did have the class there. So it's like, it's really pinning a whole bunch of things together from other people's stories, my memories, interpretations of what it could have been, and other things like the GATE or the MKUltra program, or other things that the government was experimenting with, like remote viewing and out of body experiences with Project Stargate. So I was really, it's a theory. Everything is just a big theory, but I'm trying to put together everything that I can remember and everything that I've found during this research.
This is really remarkable. And let me ask you this. Do you know of anyone, has anyone come forward who was recently in this program or is in it now? Because I'm wondering if children who are in it now wouldn't probably be aware of what you were doing, or maybe they would be prevented from coming forward. But what about more recent people who have been in it, like in the past few years?
Not the past few years. I have a lot of friends. I almost don't know anyone who was in it, like of my friends that were friends previous to doing this research, but a lot of their children were in it. And a lot of people pulled their kids out or wouldn't let their kids go in it because of what they had heard about it. So I do have some friends whose kids were in it, but that was still about 15 years ago. And I put in the book, and since you're meeting with Jake Barber, there's one of the people that are on the psionics team for Skywatcher is called Jordan Jozak. And he's maybe 30-ish years old right now. And so I think he said he was in it in like the 2000s. And he has a horrific memories of what was, I didn't hear him say that he didn't remember any of it. I haven't spoken to him directly, but he did a video that I saw, and that's as early as I could say is like the mid 2000s is the last person that I know.
You know, interestingly enough, you mentioned his, and I really want to get in touch with him and interview him. I'm aware of his work, and I'm hoping to network to him soon. I was traumatized, extremely traumatized, to the point where I nearly died. I had to be taken out, and I was isolated for months, taken out of school even completely because of what happened. And so it's interesting to me that Jordan would mention being traumatized recently, because I was sort of hoping that the program had evolved to the point that that wouldn't happen. But I think the reason for the traumatization is it cracks the cosmic egg, and it opens a door inside you that NHI, non-human intelligence, can come through and contact you. And has that happened to you?
Absolutely. And that's, I have that quote in the book that trauma splits the mind and dissociation, yes, opens the door. So it's the dissociative ability after that of what happens when, especially children are traumatized, right? You dissociate and you go into another space as protection, like for you. That's the natural, that's what I have in the book from Dr. Colin Ross, who deals with dissociative identity disorder. And that's what happens to those kids or people who have multiple personality disorder, is that they were traumatized as a kid and their brain split. And when the trauma splits the brain and you compartmentalize and then go into a different compartment, then that's how the alters are created, right? So people are creating different alters for themselves every time they're traumatized, and they're just trying to separate themselves, jump out of this reality. So, yes. And I definitely have had many, again, I used to think they were called like spontaneous out-of-body experiences when I was a child, during traumatic events after I was out of the GATE program. So I used to call them spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And now, again, that I'm seeing my whole life through the lens of what could have happened at the GATE program, I think what happened is just like you're saying, whether we were traumatized and forced to dissociate, or whether they chose us because of our ability to easily dissociate. Obviously not in your case, that was a traumatizing event, but I don't remember a traumatizing event in the GATE program, but I know that the ability that I have to dissociate, I've been doing lots of different psychic work, like remote viewing and channeling and scrying and a whole bunch of different things. And I've been doing that for over a decade. And I've been doing it because of my ability, I thought, to get in this other place. But the other place now I'm realizing is because I have this ability to dissociate, and I had these spontaneous out-of-body experiences when I was much younger. In my early teens, when something traumatic happened, I just instantly came out of my body, and I didn't know why that was happening. But now, like I said, seeing through this lens now, I think that I was trained how to dissociate. And so when something traumatic happened to me, instead of just dealing with it like a normal person or crying or, you know, whatever, I was not there anymore. I was out of the body while the traumatic event was happening. And I think that that's why I can now do things like channel and remote view and get into that space very easily. I would never have called it dissociation before. But through this new lens, I'm thinking that that is just an ability to switch very quickly out of this reality and to get into a, you know, whatever, out of this time space, you know, into the next.
Right. And into a space that is on a different frequency that the visitors inhabit, and
yes,
that you can then interact with them. When it was being done to me, that's exactly what was being done, is dissociation was being induced by trauma. Mm-hmm. I only remember being in a confined dark space and terrible noise, but the two children who went with me, their lives were destroyed. They never had livable lives after that, both of them. And they both died early. One of them may have even been murdered at a military hospital. I'm not sure. In any case, it's a hairy business, a horrible, hairy business. And there's a kind of desperation somewhere back in there of somebody trying to make a viable interface with this other level of reality. And do you have any sense that maybe NHI, the non-human intelligence, is behind this and directing it and telling the government what they need in order to do this, in order to create an interface?
Exactly. That's a great question, because I didn't put that in the book, but I definitely obviously think about it a lot. I have a lot of hypnagogic experiences. I have since I've been 5 or 6 years old, my whole entire life. And that's also this like liminal space, which is also a time when like alien abductions happen in the middle of the night, when, you know, people are in like a, you can't say altered state of consciousness, but they're in theta. They're in like the brain wave state of theta, which where they're very, very, very relaxed when these things are happening. And I don't know if it was John Keel or Jacques Vallée, but someone said something about this is the time, like that those liminal times or those spaces in the middle of the night are those times when you can really, the you know, aliens or the beings can interact with you, because you're in this very relaxed state of mind. And if that's the time when they can do it, yeah, I thought about if it had to do with coming from them, coming from the like the NHI, or if it had to do with the government, or just like you know, experiments that they were running. I don't know. But I did want to also go back to what you just said about one of the theories in the book also that was a theory online, is what happens long term to people that were in the GATE program. And like you just said about how the two other people that you know that were in it, their lives were destroyed after. One of the theories I look at is long term what happens. And I found this, I didn't make this up, I found this online. But one of the theories was that there was three outcomes, basically, for what happens to people that were in the GATE program. One is that they go into science, technology, math, you know, some kind of, or space, like a space, you know, like NASA or astronauts or something, astrophysicists. They go into that realm, like a, you know, a science or technology realm, like a career path. The other one is that the people end up having borderline personality disorder or some kind of personality disorders, suicide, attempts or addiction. And the other one was that they come out psychic. And when I heard that, I, again, couldn't believe it, because there was two other kids in my class. And one of them got some kind of like their visa, a green card to the States, which is very hard for Canadians. But he was in Silicon Valley. He went down there because of his, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was a, some kind of tech program that he was in. And he got a job in San Francisco and he was there, and he passed away when he, when we were under 50. So I don't know if it was like 48 or 49, apparently of a heart attack. I did not keep in touch with him, so I don't know the details except for that. And the other girl that was with me in the program, who I have been friends with my whole life, she was in the other category where she had borderline personality disorder. She had many suicide attempts, addiction problems. So, and then I just wrote a book about psychic abilities, and I've been doing this for a long time. So I was floored when I saw that online, that that was one of the theories, because that's exactly the three people in my class. That's exactly what happened to all three of us. So like you said, if whether that forced the trauma and the dissociation, some people just can't take it, can't tolerate it. And as they grow up and they have no, I don't know, rebounding board, because they don't know about aliens or psychic abilities or, you know, other states of consciousness, maybe they don't know how to interpret it. And maybe their family doesn't know how to interpret it. So they just think they're losing their mind. And maybe that's it. And then maybe people, because I know from my background, I'm very aware my grandma was a medium and saw UFOs, and my parents, you know, my family has been into all this kind of paranormal stuff my whole life. I've been reading about it since I was, you know, 8 years old.
And this is why you can function, undoubtedly.
Maybe, yeah. And maybe this is where the interest comes from. But also, when I had those spontaneous out-of-body experiences when I was younger, I didn't think, oh my God, I'm losing my mind, I have to go see someone. And you know, I just thought, I knew I popped out of my body. I knew that that's what an out-of-body experience was, that you view yourself from the ceiling, you know. So I didn't know why it happened. And I was crying, you know, like, and I was hysterical after. But because I didn't know why it happened, but I had an explanation for it, where maybe a lot of people, what this trauma does is they don't know how to deal with it because they don't know who to talk to, or they don't have like a support network of their family or whatever, and explanations for it. And yeah, and then there was like the people that go into the tech world, which I don't know, you know, again, there's like STEM programs and stuff that the US government was testing for, the science, technology, engineering, and math. And that's what apparently a lot of people were pulled into the GATE program for, because they thought that, you know, the intelligence level, the IQ testing was maybe going to funnel these people into those programs. So that is like a plausible explanation for why that would be one of the outcomes. But like you said, the guy in my class died very early at 48 or 49, I think it was.
That's one of the two people I've just talked about died at 52, 53. Yeah,
very strange.
Exactly. And it's the difference between those of us who have lived with it, because I'm way past trauma with the visitors now. I mean, she's up on my wall beside my wife, because I consider them both my wives. And I don't think she's a single individual. I think she's a representative of a whole different way of being alive. But some people can do this and others can't. Yeah. And I remember when I was a kid, the fun that was involved, and my daddy would take me out to the country house in the night, and I would meet them, and I don't remember anything about what I did, but he would stand in the front yard of the house and I would go walking off in the dark into a pasture where they had come down. You could see them come down over the house. And I didn't even think twice about it. I wasn't scared in any way. I just went and whatever it was. And then they would come to the house. It was all wonderful fun. And then when they quit, when I reached puberty, they also left my life. and it was very traumatizing to lose them. So what is it that, and I know I'm not alone, I know other people who did not get crushed by this. Why not? Why did some people not get crushed?
Yeah, that's interesting because I also have a couple similar experiences. When I was 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old, I started having, you know, I was petrified of the dark. Like, I was so petrified of the dark, I slept with a nightlight on until I was 40 years old. And only because when I was 40 in 2012, I had a very close encounter UFO experience that it completely changed me. And I completely changed as a person after that. And I ended up being so, and after, so I won't go into the story, but this, you know, bright light came towards me when I called it, when I saw it way in the distance. And it came towards me and sat in front of me. And I was like staring at this, you know, insanely brilliant diamond white light. And I had like the Oz effect, bless you. The Oz effect happened and I, you know, couldn't hear anything for a second. I was like paralyzed. I couldn't run. I had missing time, a whole bunch of things. But the funny thing is when I was like released from this, like, you know, paralyzing stance that I was in, when I was trying to run and get away from them, this millisecond that they released me and I started, like, you know, running a little bit there, that bright light started going in the opposite direction. The exact time I was released, they started going in the opposite direction. And I only took a couple steps of, you know, running away, and I saw them leave, and I was completely overwhelmed and heartbroken. And I started bawling and then turned around and started chasing them and chased them all out to the end of my community, which was the end of the city, and watched them go away. And I was bawling the entire time, wishing that they could come back and get me. So I don't know if that 2012 experience, again, has anything to do with, because you're going to get into like the ET contact part of it. And if the, if this program did something to us that let us be able to communicate with them, if they were involved in that or what. But I do know that I have the my survey right here as well. And the number of people that were in GATE program, just from my survey here, that have had UFO experiences after the fact is 60%. So, you know, I just looked up, you know, stats to see how many people say that they've encountered UFOs, and it's, you know, about 10% for the general population. But for the GATE program, everyone that completed my survey, it's 60% of people that were in GATE have had UFO experiences. So that has to make you think, not to mention Jake Barber's testimony and Jordan Jozak's. But that has to make you think that there is some kind of correlation, not just with psychic abilities and the GATE program, but possible ET communication.
We have reached, amazingly enough, the top of the hour. We're going to keep on, and I think I'm going to run this over 2 weeks. And so next week, we will continue on, folks, with this extraordinary interview, because we're not even close to being finished. I've asked about four of these questions. So we've got lots more to go. And so next week we will continue on and go deeper into this program and into something else that's happening. I think a lot of people in the program who were in the program are being activated now. I think Desta is among them, and I believe that a lot of people who were in that program are coming forward in various ways and have extraordinary abilities that are in the process of awakening. So next week, we're going to go deeper. Desta, thank you so much for being with us. Desta Barnaby's book is MK Ultra for Children. Her website is MysteriaLuna.com. It's such a cool name. How did you come up with that name?
Oh, we were just trying to come up with something maybe like Latin sounding, but that had to do with, you know, the mysteries of the universe kind of thing. So it was Mysteria Luna. We just agreed on that.
The immense importance of the moon. When I was in the secret school as a child, the moon was described as the creator, the creative force that had been left here, put here, to draw life out of the earth. And if you look at the science behind that, the moon's retarding of the orbital wind that would be, if the moon wasn't there, there would be a massive wind blowing around the earth all the time. There would be nothing here of life except maybe lichens and things. But the way the moon and the earth work together, the wind is slower. And the tides are and weather, and everything depends on that relationship between the earth and the moon. So I just thought, Mysteria Luna, you're talking about something you may have learned in the Gateway program.
Oh, yes,
that's
right.
Inside the missing time.
You're right. That's amazing. Yeah.
Okay, on that note, Desta, thank you so much for being with us this week. And folks, wait for it, because we're going to be back again next week with another hour with Desta Barnaby.
Thank you, Willie.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.